You are tuned to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM, your community radio station in East Central Illinois. My name is Bill Saylor. Thank you for tuning in. The Prairie Monk program will be up momentarily. Well, I have a few things to say before I start the Prairie Monk program today. First is that the Prairie Monk program, if any of you are listening from the previous hour, I want to let you know that the Prairie Monk program this hour at 11 o'clock, the program is going to be ending. After this month, there will not be a Prairie Monk program. That means there's one more of many opportunities for you or somebody you know that might add a new voice to WEFT Radio, to broadcast radio in your community. It's another opportunity. You can do that. That's what WEFT Community Radio is. None of us here are paid professionals, at least not paid in the WEFT context. We're here to share the knowledge we have and the connections with the community people that we have. If you have email, you can find out more by emailing programming@weft.org. That's two M's in programming. Or on our website, weft.org. We do have a little more organization than if you happen to know somebody here. There's a little bit of hope that we can share volunteer responsibilities and some common messages. But basically, there is a lot of opportunity on WEFT, and there's more actually open slots in our schedule during the week than you might realize. Because things are playing. We don't often communicate it that way. So consider that. If you or somebody that you know in your community, like I said, could add a new voice, different perspectives, diverse perspectives to the radio, think about that. WEFT is supported in part, being a non-commercial radio station, by you, the listeners, and by Elliott Counseling Group, providing compassionate mental health care to the community for nearly 20 years. Elliott Counseling Group offers counseling and behavioral health medication support and management to children, adolescents, and adults of all ages. Elliott Counseling Group serves Champaign, Urbana, Tuscola, Charleston, Mattoon, and surrounding communities, with visits currently held both in person and via online telehealth appointments. More information is available at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That's two L's and two T's in Elliott. Or by phone at 217-398-9066. Next, before I start the Prairie Monk program. Oh, the music you heard there was by Enlay and Kara Day. Enlay is Sam Wong on piano. Kara Day is a violinist. I don't know if it's called this, but the Indianapolis Symphony, it has been. And they have a couple compilations out. One is available on Bandcamp called A Description of the Sky. And that was the opening track to a newly released CD, Firmamentum. I haven't seen it up there. I got it from the hands of the artist, more or less, as close as one gets. The merch table, Enlay, E-N-L-A-I, and Kara Day. I'm sad to report, as many of you probably know, and I just happened upon while on the City of Champaign website, I think yesterday or the day before, I was just looking for a date of a meeting and saw a note posted by the mayor in memory of State Senator Scott Bennett. And there's an article in the Saturday, yesterday's News Gazette, December 10th, with quotes from all sorts of local public servants and leaders that work with Scott Bennett. I did not know Scott Bennett. I was not acquainted, but certainly I was aware of his work. Hard work in a hard field, bringing experience to really important and difficult decision making recently at the state level. It is a surprise, and his work, and he will be missed. With that, all the buttons are pressed. It's time for the Prairie Monk. With the voice of Dave Monk, I think, in here somewhere. Thank you for tuning in.
Blue railroad train and going down the railroad track. It makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. To hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go.
And indeed, this is WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, the Prairie Monk program. I'm Bill Saylor. Thank you for tuning in. A little out of sorts. And there's a little bit of rain left, or at least it's a dull day today. Today is December 11th, 2022. I am live in the studio today, bringing as much as I can fit, mainly my own remembrances, my own sharing my own association with Dave, also sharing his message, not attempting to share his biography so much because it's out there. I finally found my print, my print references, the retrospective from the art show in August that Cope Cumston and others put together. That had a really nice write-up of Dave Monk, the Prairie Monk. Dave passed away a little over a week ago on December 2nd, that Friday morning, after months of a long fade out from cancer, not to mention, as I've been saying, a lifetime of hard work. He was at the University Rehab Center, which used to be formerly the county nursing home out in Urbana behind Brookins Center, and enjoyed a steady stream of visitors in the months that he was there. And also enjoyed, as his, physical essence was failing, he had the mental, emotional acuity he always had in his Prairie Monk way, his Gestalt way. Up until I would say the last week, I was not there the last few days, but even though it would take the usual tangents a lot of the time, and he was trying to do his work, even though he was not mobile, he was engaging until the end. Again, my name is Bill. I was on this radio program at this time with Dave from 1993 through 2011. David had the radio show long before then, actually, and not necessarily in this time slot. And it was a very important resource for Dave Monk to communicate just what he was doing. I always like to explain the show as this week in the life of Dave Monk, because he did many things, but he also valued it as a platform to communicate with his supporters, but with everybody really, about his work in our local environment. Before I get started, a little more detail, I want to let you know that some of Dave's art is available. Kathy Martin has reminded me of this. She compiled a booklet, well, a catalog of available silk screens, or mostly available silk screens. It's an annotated booklet, and there's a version of it on Facebook. That is the, I think, the most accessible way to view what is available. Silkscreen being a kind of silhouette, say black and white, but some of them are two and three color art prints. Dave and was very active in producing and teaching others to produce and work with through, I'd say, the 1970s and early 80s. You can find it on Facebook if you're Facebook able and tolerant by searching when you're on Facebook for David Monk's, and you don't need an apostrophe, silk screens, all one word, and you'll get a couple results right away that are kind of obvious. You could go to that page, and there's a photo tab on the, I think it's photos. Photos and libraries, one or the other, forget which comes first, at least the silk screens you can open up, and there's a bunch that load up. The more you scroll, the more that load. You can click on any one, get a little annotation in the image. The print catalog, it follows the print catalog. I'm hoping to have Kathy explain it to you on next week's show in some manner, but we'll see how that goes. But I wanted to share that with you. Let you know that is available. They are selling prints to support as friends of Heartland Pathways and to tidy up Dave's affairs. My next couple shows, I've kind of I have a self-appointed deadline of concluding the Prairie Monk program this month, so that leads this show and two shows. I felt that this show was probably the only time to share my own, have my own discussion about working with Dave, as far as we might get. Again, the retrospective booklet that Cope put out included biographical information, both from Dave Monk's early life, provided by his sister, Dorothy. And they had an art show in Australia somewhat recently that a lot of that kind of work got pulled together from the family. And also a reprint of a more recent interview with Dave and some other things. So it's a nice comprehensive, nice long list of the various things that Dave was at the table for. Sometimes I think people misinterpret what Dave has said about, for instance, the beginning of Grand Prairie Friends or the Kickapoo Rail Trail. I don't think Dave was ever trying to present an idea that he was responsible for something. He was just often, the more I learn from other people involved and from the way he told it in different ways at different times, often part of the conversation. And I know he saw that as his role and whatever he happened to be doing more formally at the time. I think those stories are a lot more. He was at the table and helping people see what the possibilities would be for this or that resource in our community or outside our community. Once again, David Monk, Prairie Monk, host of this program for at least 30 years. I was, in very large part, educator. I learned from those bios that he had more formal teaching roles than I kind of consciously remembered hearing about before he left Australia to come here to Illinois as having a kind of a scientist background. I almost started thinking about this as an applied agriculturalist. Agriculturalist is almost too specific there because obviously it included a broader range of ecology and certainly a streak of botany in there. But the formal teaching positions he had there and came here that look, I think, more like probably extension, whether or not it was actually in that framework, became less and less formal over time. And eventually, Dave set up here on Market Street, right next door to WEF, downtown Champaign, as a not-for-profit organization. He called Environmental Resources, no, Educational Resources and Environmental Science, ERES, which in addition to that bit of confusion, there was another business in the phone book in this community called ERES. And so that was not the most convenient title to communicate what you were doing, even if the words did mean something if you stop to think about them. But the acronym, you know. So eventually, as he developed a more active interest in trying to acquire abandoned rail bed for possible rail trails and prairie preservation, he founded Heartland Pathways, which is the organization that is going in into the future and going to continue the work. I met Dave in 1992. So as I mentioned last week, I've only known Dave for 30 years, only the last third of his life, only sort of the Market Street era. Kind of by that time, even the Heartland Pathways space next door, Dave lived upstairs. I'm going to round it to 24 stairs, no landing, a typical historic downtown building. The downstairs was gathering enough material that Dave himself gathered or was bequeathed often. It was becoming more of a warehouse than an office space that helpers could work in, I would say. Many people were... If they met Dave at this time, or by this time, worked with him for a while, he would eventually mention his wife, Jan. And it came as a surprise to, I'm sure, many, including myself, that who might have wondered, after, you know, with this kind of downtown single lifestyle, running around the landscape about his family situation. He had a wife, Jan Monk. They were married in the 60s. I think 64 might have been the date. And Jan was also studying here. She was Australian also. She has a PhD in geography and was interested in women's studies, gender studies. Did not, as Dave would tell it, really find support to do that here at the University of Illinois. So they eventually moved to Arizona, where she got a position at Tucson. Sometime in the 1980s, when the rail bed, the railroads centered around the Monticello area, west of Champaign, were abandoned by, and that usually means the railroads looking to sell it off, pull up the steel, maybe pull up the ties, maybe pull up the bridges. Those who want to preserve that resource try to catch that ahead of time because the bridges are the hard thing to replace. That opportunity arose, and Dave came back here to take advantage of the opportunity. Both Dave and Jan, as I understand from people who knew them and family were both very dedicated to their careers and their causes. And I think about that as, I've thought about that often over the course of my time and what I do, and how others do that, how they just, to what extent they decide to incorporate family, whether they choose to have a home life, if they're really out in the vanguard in the community, some role of leadership, the choices of dedication to their work or a cause. Dave and Jan were in regular communication that I knew just from Dave casually mentioning, almost weekly phone calls. Not so much visits after a while. But that was part of Dave's life that was quietly there in the background, still in the background. And, it was a relationship that continued in a different sort of way. So I moved to Champaign-Urbana from the Chicago suburbs. I'm kind of originally from the edge of the suburban area in the Chicago area, which is sort of an environment where you see change happen to the landscape. And that particular landscape has some variety to it. So I guess by the time I came down here and I had not had a particular plan, I still don't. But when I came down here, many of my friends from high school had come down here and gone to undergrad, and I'd lived in the city for a while. I was kind of ready to be done with that. But I was starting to follow issues of environment and growing interest in the landscape. And my friends who were here, I'd also been in college radio, which I had also been done with by the time I moved down here. However, my friends who were down here would tell me about their favorite characters on WEFT, one of whom was Dave Monk. At the time, he had a Tuesday program, Tuesday afternoon. It's before we had strip programming that made our weekday programming consistent. Dave often expressed that he missed having Tuesday afternoon. It allowed, while he played music, he talked about the prairie at length. And he believed he had a broader reach of an audience with that resource. Anyway, so my friends told me about this gentleman who talked about the prairie and all the time. And one day, they were sitting out in front of the newly opened, then on Taylor Street, Blind Pig restaurant. It did not even have the alcohol license yet. It was serving lunch. It was a juice bar, basically, originally. And Dave came along and basically offered them $5 an hour to help pull plants that the Department of Transportation had planted on a new section of Windsor Road, which was between First Street and Neal Street. And he is going to pull them out and transplant prairie into it. And reseed prairie, as he had a collection of seed, inventory of seed, and plants to be moved from Route 45, which was bit by bit, over time, being widened from two or three lanes to what you see it today. And it had remnant prairie along a fair amount, or even prairie restoration here and there that Dave fostered with different property owners. But as it was being taken out, he would try to get some scoops and shovels and volunteers and move the plants to another destination. I got in on this project to go pull some plants. It happened to be a very wet season, but not completely drenched. So it was ideal for pulling out the plants, which were white clover. which are kind of bushy, and they look okay. They don't have much of a root system. They kind of have a bundled root system, and they're not really native. So Dave was kind of redoing a stretch of the embankment on a ditch. And my friends went out a couple times. Well, I went out a couple more times. Then I got invited to the radio show, Spring 92. And I'd listened to Dave's show. This is when it was Sunday morning in a half hour. And sometime later, about a year later, I think, I was listening to Dave on the radio. And he was trying to play a tape. And he was not succeeding at playing a tape for a reason that I recognized instantly, because I knew the sound of that tape deck when you were trying to play something while the record input was also on. It's a squealing feedback, reminiscent of the phone melting and fail-safe. And so I just came to the station. I don't know if I had a car then. I came to the station, said, I know how to do that. Help them do that. I've been here ever since. I did go through the formal training, by the way. And it was good. It was the beginning of a really neat friendship. As you know, many of you have had with Dave. Dave has always been very, very supportive of, you know, most everything you do, of people he's become acquainted with. As far as finding different things to do, expressing yourself, things like that. It was also a working relationship. And at this point, I'm going to say it's almost half past the hour today, so I'm going to say you are tuned to the Prairie Monk program on WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. My name is Bill Saylor. I'm basically sharing my association with Dave over the time. I hope I'm not going to talk myself out of playing a few recordings from Dave from different shows I'd been listening to see what I might want to play that are not the most profound, but there's always something in there that comes up often that reveals the monkian approach to life and the message to people. Maybe I'll just do that right now. I'm gonna play one here from Dave is talking about the back road somewhat. So if you've worked with Dave for any length of time, you realize that it would take a length of time. If you went out the big seat or whatever, that's fine. But often the trips would meander, and that's good. A lot of my early experience was hopping in the truck and going with Dave and getting a tour, personal tour, basically, of the rail bed, of Shady Rest, the plot that eventually went to the Forest Preserve in Piatt County, all the explanation that went with those resources that Dave would share along the way. At that time, he was, he had taken up some space in the Monticello Pepsin factory, which was a relatively large multi-story pharmaceutical factory. He would described often at this time, it had been, the business had been closed. It wasn't exactly vacant. It was owned by a gentleman here who stored a restaurant equipment in there. So that people who might want to buy used, reclaim, say, commercial kitchen equipment could do that. It was a rather large building. It also had a lab in it, having been a pharmaceutical company, a drug producer. And David moved some of his field equipment in there that you use to maintain a prairie, shovels and fire flappers and Seed, the store in there. And it was there that I learned about his overall vision, that at that point, with that resource available, was sort of his focus of it. And the overall vision to this, well, to this day, to till really this last year, he was still formulating this vision in some way of having a prairie interpretive center and central sort of workshop cultural center combined west of Champaign, whether that's closer to Monticello, where he towards the end here was anxious to tell people is sort of a retreat. It could attract this, it could support this, or in between, when he had consolidated various of the same resources he had in a warehouse in Bonneville. Same idea. Where could this be? I never settled on it. But that was Dave's vision for Heartland Pathways, in addition to saving the physical material resource, especially the remnant prairie. Dave did a lot of proselytizing about rail trails, and that included arguments in support of why save the rail bed and not just grade it, sell it off, that kind of thing. Those were all important. The recreation is an appeal to many people if a rail trail is developed as a hiking trail or whatever. But the Prairie Monk messages, that's where our remnant native ecosystem locally is. It's one of the few places where any of it remains anymore. The inherent resource is important, which is a whole other discussion. And that's where it is. It was sometimes difficult to work with Dave. Dave had his way about certain things. And you work together. And you learn. It could be difficult to work with Dave if you had a specific objective or limited time. And that was okay with Dave. but not for some. And so some, met, passed through, might not be able to stay. I personally decided that the radio program was where I had the where I could support Dave the most. And as I moved on to graduate school and other things, it wasn't going to be field work on my part. But it's also difficult for land managers negotiating with Dave, and many of us know this. I mention this again because Dave's prime directives, one, education, often informal education, but two, preserving that prairie resources and trying to really maximize that. And whether it turned out optimally or not, to protect the resource, the potential resource. And it's the resource of the ecosystem. Not just about the beautiful plants. Along the way, the beauty of the plants in the ecosystem was a big part of really Dave's interest, Dave's message, and people's interest in Dave's work and what he was doing. In the era of print photography, I swear he never took a bad picture. Of course, that comes with a lot of experience. But it's not easy to take a picture that shows you something when the entire background is like green. Dave would often say a dull day like this was is a good day to take pictures, because then you're not sort of fighting a high contrast in an image and things like that. But Dave had a knack for that. Okay, I'm going to play here again before I run myself out. oh, just part of a conversation that emerged on a show one day. This is, it happens to be from 2009. Dave taking the slow roads and how it would often go, but also why he was on the road, what he was doing. And like I said, it emerges into just another window into what Dave was hoping to do and hoping to bring out in the community. So you're tuned to the Prairie Monk program on WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. My name is Bill Saylor. Thank you for listening.
I was at a meeting in Great Lakes Institute. It's a training institute, and I was thinking that this is a conglomeration of five or six states that get together and hold a institute for 3 or 4 days each year in the February in the months. We learn in the winter months when we can't dig outside, and that was it. But I went to the bank the night before, and I could tell that this was no group of young people. There were young people there, but this was all the nabobs in the area, and some of them were heads of department and whatever. So I felt very proud of myself because I've only just accomplished the PowerPoint retinue, putting in pictures and getting them in order, and I'd had helpers to put that together. And I could change it overnight. I didn't get much sleep, but I changed it so that I was talking to a more mature audience about the need for interdisciplinary studies that allowed people like recreators to bridge not just 2-3 disciplines, audience, but 20 or 30 different disciplines. Mm. So they one day they're law enforcers, another day they're artists, and another day they're engineers. How can we do that in a PhD program? It's basically wanting them to be specialists in theory and it be a world first sort of thing, whereas these are people who have tremendous amount of knowledge about things, and you just like to bring them in and say, teach my PhDs how to do this. And so that was my story, and I wanted project approach where you go to Bonneville and you put in a new West Side visitor center perhaps, or you go to Rantoul and you gather up an old railroad bed in a prairie, and how does the university lock into that and accept responsibility for doing that and encourage it? We've just been talking about the black community and how you archive the history of the black community, and that involves also a lot of different disciplines, different people. So it sparked a spark in people who came up afterwards and asked me questions, and now have email response to make to that, and there'll be a continuation between that talk. And I was very diffident about that because I don't do a lot of talking at that sort of level, and so I felt pleased. I stayed around later and talked to a lot of people, including locals that were at the hotel, and this frozen lake, and the snow was coming down and drifting here and there. And I took photographs, and I talked to the people that came from Fort Wayne just to be there for the occasion. And we had wonderful discussions, apart from any meeting. And we had person who helped me put up the PowerPoint, who was also doing things in other countries and other places with electronic equipment. So it was a wonderful experience. I came back, and it's like being on the other side of the world for
other one, side of the river.
It was one day I was there, one whole day. One of the things we would like to the PhD program for that sort of thing that's interdisciplinary between, say, landscape architecture, art history, education, those sorts of things, is we would like those people who have 40 years of experience to come and get credentials, to be able to put that into the credentials that they get, so they don't have to invent their own wheel, so that we take use of that. And one of the marvelous things is that the community colleges do some of that. They're not as long-lived. They're only 2-year community colleges, but they do a lot of community outreach. I'm looking for the academics to provide us with some of that zest, which is not specialized. What and you're doing is is letting people get access to information. If this was an Oxford Don with three students, then that would give us a very elite three people. But those three people wouldn't be spreading it. But if you're also on radio, and you're also in the lecture hall, and you're also on the internet, you're getting to a powerhouse of other people, and people who would normally not have access to the university. So we want those people who are interdisciplinarians to also have some of that sort of spirit and hand it on to other people. People who have history, but how do we archive it, and how do we continually archive it, and how do we encourage people to put that history onto paper? And we haven't done that awfully well. We've been six generations hoeing in the soil and becoming, racing from being peasants to being who we are now. So who we are now, it's time for preserving some of that dignity. But I think
So even if it serves for us to let you hear it again until the day that you say, oh, I've heard that so much, I'm going to do it.
Yes.
And we're telling each other at the same time.
I go to city meetings, and some city people will say, I'll say, I apologize because I've said this before, and some people come up afterwards and say, no, you have to say it again and again and again.
And plus there's always new audience coming and going.
And some people come up to me and say, I'm so glad you say that because I couldn't do it. I'm not in a position to do that without it hurting my employment. This all helps us to communicate. There are things like Facebook, which we can or cannot use. It's gotten to be that it was started off by somewhat older people, I think, and then it got to be a younger crowd's involvement, and then it's swung back so that actually some people use it a lot, professional people, and so you have to be tolerant, understanding of what sort of use other people are making of Facebook and what you're making of Facebook. I mean, you find something interesting in the environment, like a hornet's nest, you can put it up on Facebook, and people will have a little bit of experience about a condominium of a hornet's nest that's being, as the hornet's nest goes out for the season, so in come the little orange ladybugs, the Asian ladybugs, and they need a home. So it becomes a recycled condominium, and it's kind of exciting. So just put that up on Facebook or a YouTube. It's kind of helpful.
Did you put this on Facebook?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
I got hold of Kristen Johns, and she has a video camera, and she came and videoed this situation and put it up on YouTube. And YouTube is getting better. It's for scientific things, especially, you sometimes need lots of detail. And YouTube has been sort of low pixel rate, but it's getting better. And you can put photographs up on Facebook too. It's mostly friends and relatives, but it can also be the little pieces of the world that you encounter that are interesting. And that's somewhat new. It's a little difficult in a way because more people are getting to know more information. And then when you come to leadership, you're trying to sort out leadership, it gets confusing because we're all a little bit more educated and we all have our own ideas. So we were entering an era when it is somewhat more difficult to decide on leadership and how we use these items. So the world is changing a little, and we have to be able to adapt.
You are listening to the Prairie Monk program on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. My name is Bill Saylor. That was me chuckling in there, too. I'm playing a few excerpts of past conversations we had on this program. with Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk. Dave Monk passed away on December 2nd, just a little over a week ago. And I'm trying to condense in 1 hour some of Dave's main messages. Of course, you've heard them over time, but I'm impressed as I go through some of the recordings in these last few weeks to share something with you. Insights like that. Dave was fascinated by multimedia. No surprise, of course, given everything he's given the artistry in his life throughout and communicating through it. And next week, I'm going to have a little bit more on that topic. He made good use of YouTube. After about the end of 2012, when Dave Wozzani was co-host here, they spent a lot of time. They brought a video camera here, videoed most every week on the radio, and then when they had time, inserted images to go with the message. And Dave was very eager to do that. So those are on YouTube. You can search YouTube on The Prairie Monk. I have one more selection I want to squeeze in here. And this was actually part three of the elevator discussion, of which I've run parts one and two. And at the time, I stashed these away with a good label that I could find them again. Because this concluding message is is one of the more poignant messages. And he's talking about an elevator being dismantled, a grain elevator. But it's the concept. And when you listen to this, don't think so much about the elevator. Think about what else, the bigger concepts that Dave is talking about. Also think about how this applies to Dave Monk.
We've been dealing with an icon. What is an icon? Well, all you computer buffs know what an icon is. It's what leads you into a program or into a bunch of information. It can look like a daisy or look like someone with a pencil. It is something that tells you that you're coming to something, and it can help you slip through and understand the community that you're moving into. Well, we've been dealing with what I call an icon, which is an elevator. And it's something that people go past every day of their lives, and some people never see it. But other people certainly do see it, and they love it, and they put their arms around it and hug it as something. It can be an icon for someone coming to town, but it's also an icon for somebody who comes back to town after they've been away. You know, if you grew up with raising hogs, and you come back to town and you smell hogs, then you're in heaven. And the same sort of thing relates. So I've been watching this elevator. So why would we need that elevator? Well, I think in the first place the farmers need it. They all have stories. They love these icons, but they're also pretty pragmatic. Farming's not an easy business. And you have to these days have 3,000 acres and that you harvest from. And despite the fact that the corn has been up to $7 a bushel and then dropped down to $3 again, and it's a risky business. The history of elevatoring is emblematic in that elevator. Why do we need an icon? Well, you need to tell people who you are, what you are. This is a flat land, and for someone coming in, it's very, very flat, but it's not. It has a moisture gradient. It has moraines. It has outwash plains. And this elevator is on the outwash plain, and so it's the highest point around the community. So yesterday I was photographing the lightning arrestor, and it's the highest point around in the community for miles and miles and miles. You can see it from miles. And so it's part of telling you what this is. It's not a mountain. It's not an ocean. It's not Everett Dirksen being aggrandized in Pekin, Illinois. It's not Walnut Point, which has become Smith Prairie in Iowa because it's a political thing. It's not Mother Jones. It's not all these things. It's not a tomato sauce bottle because this town produced tomato sauce. But it tells you something about the flatland. And it tells people coming back home that it's flatland and their home. And yes, you're Irish and you'll be up on the hill a little bit, or you're the Lutherans or Methodists or what have you, differently located. So it's got character. And each town can do with that sort of thing, even if it's a potato on the end of a stick that's 20 feet high. It says this is a slightly different town. It thinks a little differently. This anyway, that gives you the opportunity to have some character understanding of this place. It's a first entree. It allows you to talk to someone if you stop and someone says, "Ah, yeah, I saw your elevator. You must be doing grain here," or something like that. It just gives you an access. So I'm still looking at this elevator, and it's being unclad at the present time, and I see there's ladders in the belfry. But I would like to preserve that building, and I don't know quite how to do it. How do you do this? Would you go out there with Burma Shave signs and run along the road and say something to the public with signs that are like Guns R' Us? Or do you write to the newspaper? And you have to do it in the face of families who are very, very genuinely interested, but worried that indeed you can be killed by historic preservation. If you have a church that has a congregation of six families and somebody gets it listed as a historic monument, then you can be left with something that you can't handle. So, and you have to be very aware of the owners and their concerns, and even if it were bought by a county agency like the Forest Preserve, is it going to be kept up? Is it going to be a challenge? Will it be looking ugly from a farming point of view, where all the roads are mown and all the cornrows are straight, and this building has rust on its skirts? So what do you do when you're faced with the loss of an icon, and it will never be there again? So you do what you can, and often you lose out, but in the process you teach people that these sorts of things are important. I had one other thing to add there. Farmers themselves need these things too, because they need to communicate with voters and politicians. When it comes to a farm bill, you need votes from your constituency, and to have people know what farming is, to know what a articulated tractor is, to know that your milk comes from more than a plastic jug. This is important for farmers too. So it is to some extent important that farmers save these items too.
You're listening to the Prairie Monk program on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Specifically, that was an excerpt of the Prairie Monk from 2008. And before that, we had a few from 2009, so almost 15 years ago. One more thing about icons. The risk, I guess you would say, of the icon is that sometimes the icon becomes the one trusted steward, or, as Dave said, in a way, their emblem of the broader thing. And thinking about the Prairie Monk, Dave Monk, as icon, as a steward, we run the risk while he was with us that he's taking care of it, we have this guy, he's taking care of it. That's, you know, we value Dave among all the other reasons, you know, personal and that, but we value him as the person in the community as watching out for us for that thing we're interested in. And the icon is valuable for all the reasons you just heard in the last 3 minutes, but it's not enough. It may be necessary to have those, to have some sort of visual communication, representation, but it's not the only thing. You know, it's also up to us to sort of live the value. And it may be up to some of us to do that on a macro level. And in fact, decide to devote more time, more learning to how we can do this, more going to government meetings. There are times in the trajectory and the arc of our lives where we have more time to do that and time where we have less, invariably, for reasons that are just life, just human nature. Sometimes our internal choices, sometimes our external choices. So that's what we have to think about that Dave left us. I have 2 more weeks of Prairie Monk programs to bring you. I have a couple favorite topics that I'm hoping to find. I had a little bit of setback this week. My mini disc player decided to go into a long sleep. I don't know if I'm going to resolve that or not, because several years of archive on that format. I want to thank you for tuning in. My name is Bill Saylor. I could have many shows, more than 2 more, but the 2 more are kind of self-imposed. I don't want to miss conveying certain things, including thanks. In addition to some folks I thanked last week, I wanted to add some folks, and there are many. So many people, even listening, I'm sure I've never met and not acquainted with, but some I know have been working with Dave in the background for so long, especially in the last year, as Dave, faded and didn't have his home resources, to work with. I want to thank, Peg Shaw and Al. Peg had great tribute posted about Dave. Stuart Levy has worked with Dave a long time, different capacities. Ron Slater out in Decatur, if I'm remembering that name right, independently helping preserve those prairie resources in the field. Mick Wolf, who, you know, was a neighbor all the time he was here at WEFT, also trying to help Dave